And here we go.
Dr. Evil, we have a problem.
This is gonna be cool.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
They look like a couple of dorks.
Perfect. We couldn't have planned this better.
As of this moment, they're on double secret probation.
What's happening, hot stuff?
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
What? English, do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
And welcome, everyone, to the Sports Report. I'm Packer Dave. Glad to have you with us this week. Green Bay takes on the Lions in Detroit. The Bears play the Vikings in Minnesota. It's that final week of the season. Kind of a strange week where some teams are sitting players, other teams are jockeying for playoff position. Some are hoping to get in the playoffs. Some are just looking to see if they can better themselves as far as home field advantage and the such. But some of the games that are going to be of interest this week, of course, the Panthers and the Atlanta Falcons. That should be good. The Jaguars and Titans. And Green Bay at Detroit, not so much for the Packers. They are out of it. And let's look down the slate here as far as other games go. The Cowboys at the Eagles has some importance there. And a good slate of games. Yes, Cowboys. There's gunshots right there. And then there are the teams like the 49ers and the Bears and the Giants that are all going to be going home for the football season and calling it quits. It's hopeless for those teams for 2017. They can look forward to 2018. We have a lot on the show today. Andy Dorf from KDUS, AM 1060 NBC Sports Radio in Phoenix will join us, and we'll talk about Wisconsin sports. Andy's a Wisconsin native, so we'll talk about that. Jay Paris, author of a book about the Los Angeles Rams of yesteryear, will be joining us. Then John Poulter, our professor of sports, will talk a bit about the winter meetings in baseball. And Dan Lynn from Atlanta will preview the Rose Bowl. That's Georgia and Oklahoma. And Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting, who will join us in our next segment, is going to be covering that for us. So that should be fun for him going out to Pasadena. Much more on the show. Stick with us.
Have you ever been turned down because of bad credit? Don't let your dreams disappear. Just call us at National Credit Advisor today and see how much we can help boost your credit score. We've helped thousands repair their credit so they can finally start qualifying for the purchases they've been dreaming about. Stop being held back from getting the things you want. Call 800-605-3081 to see how much we can help your credit score no matter how bad it is. Call now. 800-605-3081. That's 800-605-3081.
The rewarding part is that we don't have to try and reach the broadest possible audience so that we can charge higher rates for advertising. We're not interested in who's hot and who's not. We're only interested in providing creative, intelligent, and even occasionally entertaining programs of quality.
Hi, Packer Dave. This is Jeff Foxworthy saying if you sit outside in 10-degree weather with a piece of cheese on your head, you might be a redneck.
Back on the Sports Report, I am Packer Dave, along with Steve Leventhal. It's a fashion statement, those cheeseheads. All the chicks dig them. They really do. All right, to talk Wisconsin sports, I love this part. I'm going to bring in my old friend from Phoenix. He's a Wisconsin native, and he is the host of Dorf on Sports. That can be heard from 9 to 11 a.m. on KDUS and does a lot of work out there in the sports field. He is Andy Dorf. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, fellas. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys, as you know.
Right. Steve, say hello to your buddy, Andy.
Hey there. You know, Dave, there was a shot one of my friends sent me from the Carolina game, Packer game in Charlotte. Cheesehead hat, and then somebody else had a cheese grater on their head.
Well, yeah. seen those all over. That's old hat. They have those at the Bears games all the time. So looking at the season overall, I want to ask you, do you think they were better off going with Brent Hundley, a young guy without experience, or should they have gotten a guy as a backup with experience, a Case Keenum type, where you don't lose that whole initial rush of games while the guy's learning?
Look, fellas, it's amazing what we saw this season in the NFL in general. All the major quarterbacks that went down, Carson Palmer, Aaron Rodgers, as we know, a lot of key players getting hurt this season. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that these guys can't practice anymore. I hate to say it, but ultimately, the way that they've made the rules to extend guys' careers is hurting the game. So that's what we're seeing right now. And as far as your question about Brent Hundley, look, he struggled quite a bit, you know, in those first couple outings. Think about the league in general. I mean, you mentioned Case Keenum, and Minnesota happens to have not one, but two, but three guys that are capable of performing in the NFL. And then you have a team like Philadelphia. Carson Wentz goes down. That's a guy I didn't mention either in my previous statement, but he goes down. And then you can throw Nick Foles in the mix, who was a starter in this league.
Yep.
You know, Ryan Fitzpatrick filled in for a while for Jameis Winston. You know, in general,
he's no good. He loses
right
everywhere he goes.
No, I agree. But my point is you know, it's very difficult to have a guy as your backup that is capable, because there's a reason he's a backup in general, fellas. He's that because he's not supposed to be a starter. So as far as Hundley goes, I'm a little disappointed with the guy, to be honest with you. You would figure that he's been in this offense for as long as he has, and he came out of the gates really struggling. So, and as far as what they did with Aaron Rodgers, I have no problem with it. You know, the hopes were to bring him back and obviously have another magical run. Didn't happen. The cards weren't meant to be this season. So at that point, take a look at Hundley, see if you have something there to bring him back as a backup, or maybe potentially this could be trade bait. So I like the move of shutting Aaron Rodgers down and letting Hundley finish out the season.
Okay, well, I agree with you there. I just wonder if we could have won one more game with somebody else. And I guess that's all hindsight is 2021.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Well, but I think the game that really hurt them, fellas, when you really think about it, was the Pittsburgh game. Because they literally did have an opportunity to win that game. They would have been 8-5 instead of 7-6, giving them a little bit of breathing room as the season went along. And then obviously not putting so much pressure on Aaron Rodgers coming back after 8 weeks. And, you know, there's something to be said for not getting that on-field contact. So Aaron Rodgers came in and the guy looked good at points. He looked terrible at other points. But truth be told, you got to have that game contact. You got to have that mentality of being hit, and he hasn't had that for 8 weeks. So ultimately, the task was just too great for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. Now I want to move to the Milwaukee Bucks, which is something that we don't talk about a lot on this show. We don't talk about enough. They made the playoffs last year and were an early exit.
My problem with the Milwaukee Bucks, in all honesty, and it's been this way for a while, is Jason Kidd. I mean, I watch this offense night in and night out. I watch a lot of basketball, and I do check out the Bucks, which, by the way, they had a nice win over Cleveland, and they almost gave that game up. They're up like 20 points, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, it's a ball game. They don't defend the three ball very well, guys. They don't defend the three ball. And their offensive schemes, to me, are very troublesome at times. I feel like they're just out there playing basketball and there's no plays being called. So I think Jason Kidd, to a certain degree, is underachieving with the kind of talent that he has there in Milwaukee. But with that being said, you asked me if they could get through the first round. It's important for them to be a top four seed, let's be honest, because as you know as well as I do, it's difficult to win games away from home, and you want to have that home court advantage. So ultimately, I think the Bucks move on if they can be a top four seed.
A lot of people aren't familiar with the Bucks. Who are some of the players that we'd be watching for as we get into, you know, the meat of the NBA season?
That's a great question. I mean, look, they obviously, we know about the Greek Freak. He's a baller. He's unbelievable. And by the way, he makes like $22.5 million. Eric Bledsoe, who they made in the trade, with the Phoenix Suns has started to really come around, if you ask me. And I think he can really make his mark in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks. They've got some other guys, Malcolm Brogdon, the president, obviously the rookie of the year last year. And I'll be honest with you, I think John Henson is underrated. I know a lot of people are disappointed with the guy, but he's long. And in general, the Milwaukee Bucks are very long. DeAndre Liggins, I like his defense. The guy can absolutely get after it. Thon Maker stretches the floor. Tony Snell is a very good defensive guy. He can play anybody on defense. And let's be honest, I'm waiting for Jabari Parker to come back, and we'll see how this guy is. So that's where you'll see a lot more of the talent once he comes back. And I didn't even mention, obviously, my man Mids. He's unbelievable. There's not a shot that Chris Middleton doesn't like, and he's not afraid to take. So the Bucks do have some talent, and ultimately, Jason Kidd has to get these guys in the top four, and they have to advance in the playoffs this season.
Excellent, Andy. Okay, now the Wisconsin Badgers, they're going to be playing in the Rose Bowl. They had one loss to Ohio State. It was a big one. So I guess that was disappointing, but overall a pretty good season.
Amazing season, let's be honest. I mean, nobody, and I mean nobody, thought that the Wisconsin Badgers would be in the title hunt, the national title hunt, and the fact that they were, and so much was riding on that Big Ten championship game against Ohio State. And I knew that that was going to be a very difficult task for them to get over, the speed of the Ohio State Buckeyes, and obviously just the great play from their quarterback, Barrett, just was incredible. And that was the question and the concern that I had about the Badgers. Would Hornibrook be able to lead them from behind? And as we all saw, he was unable to do that. But that matchup with Miami, that is an absolutely awesome matchup. I would be surprised if there is a total of 30 points scored between both of these teams. I think it's going to be a heavily defensive game. And in that case, I kind of like the Badgers, to be honest with you. However, advantage to Miami, because that game is at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, Florida. But you know, and Steve knows, the Badgers travel extremely well. So I expect to see a lot of red. I expect to see a lot of the Miami Hurricane fans. And I just expect to see a great bowl game, to be honest with you.
Yeah, we bought Rose Bowl tickets on the hopes that maybe, just maybe, the Badgers would be there. But there's nothing wrong with the game that we're going to get to see, Georgia and Oklahoma.
All right.
No,
well,
not at all.
Okay. And lastly, Andy, the Milwaukee Brewers, we got about a minute left here. What are your prospects for 2018 for the Brewers?
Great question. Let's build on the season that they had. I mean, in all honesty, again, I don't think anybody expected the Brewers to be playing meaningful baseball late into August. And I think it was just a great thing, to be honest with you. And Craig Counsell's done a wonderful job. Let's be honest, man. Just a great job by him in general. So I think the future for the Milwaukee Brewers is actually pretty bright, guys. I really do.
Okay, you can hear him on AM 1060 in Phoenix, 9 to 11 a.m. Monday through Friday. And you can get them online, so you can listen anywhere you are. KDUS is the radio station in Phoenix. NBC Sports 1060. And also, Andy's on the Sports Byline Network. Andy, thanks very much. And as we get into the NFL playoffs and further into the NBA season, we may be calling on you again, all right?
Absolutely, man. I would love it. And by the way, it's NBCSports1060.com that they can listen to me anywhere in the world. And the other one would be SportsByline.com as well.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Have a great day. Now on the Sports Report, we bring in Jay Paris. He is the author of Game of My Life, Rams, Memorable Stories of Rams Football. What about Eric Dickerson? What was his?
You know, Dickerson, he scored a couple touchdowns against his Cowboys. He grew up, of course, went to SMU. And for him to break the Cowboys' will. And what he liked about the Rams under John Robinson is if it was 3rd and 23, the Rams were going to run the ball. They didn't care, and they usually pick it up. And for him to beat the Cowboys that day, of course, he set the record with 2105 rushing yards. And just, you know, some guys beating that team growing up. And it's kind of surprising, you know, often when we write these books or we write articles, sports writers will have a game in mind already. And when these guys get to pick that game, sometimes it's not the game you think it would be. And Dickerson, his was beating his old team. For Tom Mack, I mean, here's a great Hall of Famer. He picked a loss in 1974 to the Minnesota Vikings when he was called for an infraction on the 1 yard line. Actually, it was Alan Page who moved next pass from the six, got intercepted. The Vikings would go on to win the playoff game. But it just shows you sometimes these guys are still going to dinner on games that were 40 years ago.
Okay. Now, why don't you tell us what some of your interesting stories from writing the book and what really stood out when you talked to all these former Rams players?
I think what stands out is how proud they are. And to this day, when you bring the Rams up, and especially those L.A. Rams, where, you know, when they came from Cleveland in 1946, they were the first pro team in town, and then to win the title in 51. And then those 60s, Dick Enberg's on the mic, and Gabriel, and Dick Bass, and Merlin Olsen. I mean, it was, you know, 60 in the 60s with 100,000 people every week. It was kind of like Woodstock, but everybody kept their clothes on, if you know what I mean. I mean, there was just this buzz in L.A. about these guys. But for me, getting to be able to probably talk to Jack Youngblood, I mean, Captain Blood, I mean, there was no tougher guy on the Rams. And, of course, that great story of him playing in the Super Bowl with a broken leg. What a lot of people don't remember is he broke that leg two games before that in the divisional game against the Cowboys. The team doctor couldn't tape it up because he didn't know how to tape up a broken leg. He got the trainer to tape it up, played against the Cowboys, played the next week to win the NFC title, and, of course, played in the Rams' loss to the Steelers in Super Bowl 14. What you'll probably get a kick out of is that Youngblood played in the Pro Bowl the next week with a broken leg. Obviously, they have a broken fingernail these days. They usually don't come out. They usually don't play the Pro Bowl. But what got me about Youngblood was his story about being at the University of Florida and their trainer and one of the professors trying to come up with a drink that would knock out the cramps and the aftermaths of playing in that humidity down there. Every day after practice, his senior year, they would bring out this big tin tub of some wild drink that they were trying to fix up. One day it tasted like milk. One tasted it was too sour. It was too sweet. Yeah, Youngblood, Captain Blood, he said it was terrible. They finally got it right, a citrus flavor. It was Gatorade.
What's it like to experience a team moving away? A lot of us haven't had that.
No, it's tough. And I've certainly seen up close what it's done to the Charger fans here. And I wasn't a real happy camper. And when they moved after the 94 back to St. Louis, just like I'm sure the St. Louis people weren't too happy when they left. And I think it's a shame. All these teams are moving around. I'm certainly happy the Rams are back, but it seems like, you know, that was one of the hallmarks of the NFL. There weren't too many relocations. Now they've had three in about 18 months. So I think the Rams now in their second year, they're starting to get a little bit more of a buzz, a little more traction in a region which has 10 pro teams, and that's not counting USC and UCLA. So they've turned it around, and while the Chargers are still kind of struggling to get that foothold, the Rams are starting to get that foundation. Of course, they've got 71 years of history, much of it being in L.A. New stadium is going to be a $3 billion, 300-acre complex. Every bell and whistle you would imagine from the entertainment capital of the world here in L.A., it's not going to be schlocky. It's going to be a first-class venue, and really everything's kind of pointing to when they can move into that. Now it's got all the history. It's a little dated and it's a little tough. And when there's 60,000 people in a 90,000 seat stadium, sometimes it doesn't look like there's not many people there. Or there's a home field advantage, but the crowds are coming back. But when that new place opens, you know, if you can afford a ticket, it'll be something special. That's for sure.
And then the Chargers will also be playing there too.
Right. They will be playing there. They'll be the only tenant really in the NFL. And you know, that's good and bad. That'll cut into the revenues a little bit, but when you're only paying a dollar rent, that's not bad either. You know, the Chargers thought they were going to be the Rams this year with Phillip Rivers and Antonio Gates and Keenan Allen and that exciting offense and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram on the defense. But, you know, they had a big chance against the Chiefs last Saturday night, really could have taken control of the AFC West and really would have been fun to have really two teams in a playoff race going down the stretch here, the tail end of December. That would have been some great theater for L.A. But the Chargers, as they've done so often here last 7 or 8 years, they stumbled when the stakes were the highest.
Okay, and now, luckily for you, both your teams are going to be in the same stadium. You got the Rams back where where you had him years ago. Now the Rams are back in L.A., and you cover the Chargers that many years, and they move up there too. So now maybe it's you, Jay. Maybe they're all coming to hang with you.
You know, I wish that was the case. I just love my football, and I'm glad we got football here, and I can't wait here as we get down the stretch to when the games really get going.
All right. Jay Paris, Game of My Life, Rams, Memorable Stories of Rams Football, available on Amazon. Jay, thanks a lot for coming on the show, and we'll have you back again. I'm sure you got a lot of stories.
Hey, the pleasure's all mine. Thanks for having me now.
And we will be back with more with our professor of sport in our next segment here on the Sports Report.
You know, sometimes when you compare prices on products, you think to yourself, what difference does it make? The rates are all about the same anyway. But sometimes the rates are very different. Let me give you an example where there's a huge difference in pricing between companies. Vehicle protection plans. Look, if your car is 4 years or older, having a vehicle protection plan is a no-brainer. The trick is not to overpay for it. Here are the facts. The average price of a vehicle protection plan is $2,800, while the price of a TOCO warranty vehicle protection plan for most vehicles is just $1,500. The average down payment on a vehicle protection plan is $299. With TOCO warranty, there's no down payment. The average monthly payment on a vehicle protection plan is more than $160 a month. With TOCO, the average monthly payment is just $49. To get a highly rated vehicle protection plan at a great low rate, call TOCO Warranty at 1-800-987-3157. That's 1-800-987-3157. Terms and conditions apply.
Merry New Year!
Happy New Year. In this country, we say Happy New Year.
Ha 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 ha! Thank you for correcting my English, which stinks.
Packer Dave, it's Pat Hughes reporting from the Chicago Cubs. I did work for a long time in Milwaukee, and I recall people many times saying when they grew up they wanted to be just like Vince Lombardi or just like Al McGuire or Bob Uecker or perhaps Brett Favre. Now, Packer Dave, maybe I was not listening real closely, but I don't think I ever heard anyone, and I mean anyone, say, I want to grow up to be just like Packer Dave.
Nah, you weren't talking to the right people. I'm Packer Dave along with Steve Leventhal. It is the Sports Report. Now it's time for our professor of sports, John Poulter, and he comes to us from Toronto.
Thank you, Dave. Good to be with you, hello to you as well, Steve.
Hey, John.
All right.
How are you?
So what's going on at the winter meetings?
Well, you know, everybody refers to the winter meetings as strictly as that, and the winter meetings, and a lot of the things that go on at the winter meetings are set a week to 10 days before when they have the general managers meetings, and a lot of the early talks take place at that time. And often we see the winter meetings as being sort of the center point of a lot of big deals being made. And I can break those deals down into trades where other teams are trying to find out what it may take to pry a certain player away. Or we may start to see the signings from the free agent class taking place. This past winter meetings was kind of the thing that everybody was waiting for in terms of to see what would happen in terms of where a couple of players went. First one being Giancarlo Stanton, and we touched on this on a show a little while ago. To me, the Yankees sort of came out of nowhere in that deal. I had him pegged for the West Coast. I thought he would want to go to the Dodgers. I thought the Dodgers would be in play. Clearly, they weren't. Probably the dollars and cents being the factor there, and the factor being that, yes, they could certainly afford him, but they didn't want to get into that luxury tax situation with that huge contract that he's got. The Giants and the Cardinals were big players. I understand from various sources, both public and in the newspapers, that both the Cardinals and the Giants had deals in place for Stanton. He then met with both of those teams and for whatever reason declined to waive his no trade clause to those two teams. My guess is he really wanted to go to the Dodgers. The Dodgers didn't seem to have the interest either financially or on the field in terms of talent to make that deal. So he ended up with the Yankees. And as we chatted in a previous show, the Yankees being the Yankees got the checkbook out and wrote the check. And that was sort of the first domino. The second domino was to see where Ohtani, the Japanese two-way player, might end up. And he ended up with the Los Angeles Angels. And that sort of surprised me a little bit. I figured he'd end up on the West Coast. But the Angels were not a team that I thought that he would end up with. I was thinking Seattle or San Francisco or maybe even San Diego, because there were lots of ties for those three teams. But perhaps the American League's a good spot for him, because clearly he wants to hit on the days that he doesn't pitch. And whether he can play the outfield or not in the major league level is another story, but certainly he's a hitter. I don't think he's played in the outfield even in Japan since about 2014, but certainly in terms of a hitter, he could fit in the American League in a designated hitter spot. So I think those two things were sort of what started the ball rolling. Then we started seeing other teams signing players, both from free agent standpoints and some trades that were made. And in all, there were probably a half a dozen teams that strengthened themselves at the winter meetings or shortly after. And we've seen some reasonably big names change teams, perhaps the biggest of which was Evan Longoria going in a trade for four prospects to the San Francisco Giants to fill a hole that the Giants have had at third base for quite some time, because clearly Pablo Sandoval version 2.0 is not the answer there. But other teams that have strengthened themselves would be the Phillies, with another surprise signing in my mind, Carlos Santana, Mitch Moreland returning to the Red Sox, Zach Cozart going to the Dodgers, the Astros filling in with a little bit of bit player filling with Hector Rondon and Joe Smith, sort of shoring up that bullpen. The Angels then picking up Ian Kinsler, which is starting to make the Angels look like they may be serious about being contenders. And, of course, then we had the onslaught of exits from the two Florida teams, the Miami Marlins and the Tampa Bay Rays. Both of those teams look like they're headed for a long summer in 2018. And it looks like if you're a baseball fan in Florida, once spring training is over, it's going to be a long year. So lots of funny things going on. The Dodgers and the Braves working a trade that was clearly all done for financial reasons, exchanging a lot of quote-unquote dead contracts, some of which had current money and some of which had deferred money. And I'm sort of looking at this whole situation now, and it looks to me as though a lot of these teams are not only trying to get below the luxury tax and reset their tax rate if they go over that $197 million payroll threshold, but a lot of them are getting ready for the 2018-2019 free agent class, which is going to include some huge names. And these guys all want to have some money available if and when those players do decide to go on the free agent market.
So, John, and what about the hometown Cubs here trying to bolster their bullpen?
Well, the Cubs, of course, I guess Wade Davis is still a bit of a question mark. I'm sure the Cubs would love to have him back, but as we record this show, I don't think he's made a decision. Brandon Morrow is their fallback player. Had a pretty good season with the Dodgers, just ran out of gas in the World Series. Drew Smyly, they've signed from Seattle. He's not going to play next year because he's recovering from Tommy John surgery. And, of course, Tyler Chatwood signed to bolster the starting rotation on the chance that Jake Arrieta decides to sign elsewhere. So lots of teams strengthening themselves, and the Cubs would certainly be one of those teams, Steve.
Yeah, and I noticed an article in the New York Post where they basically said the number one loser in all this was Derek Jeter, because he basically got taken to the cleaners, I guess, in some of these deals.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because when we talked about the Stanton deal on a previous show, I think I indicated to you two that that was my feeling, that they didn't get good value for Stanton. They were sort of hamstrung from the standpoint that he had a full no-trade clause, so he could waive any deal wipe out any deal that he didn't want to see go through. But there were two factors there, the obvious one being the money. $295 million, I believe, was what was left on his contract. So that's a pretty big chunk of change for any team to bite off. But the other factor is that he has an opt-out clause in that contract, which I believe is after the 2020 season. And a lot of teams would be reluctant to give up a whole pile of prospects and or roster players for a player that they may only have for three seasons, not only have to pay him big money, $29 million a year for those 3 years, but perhaps give up a whole chunk of their future for 3 years worth of talent. And that sort of limited it even further, because no team is going to sign him unless they feel they have a real solid opportunity to win in the next 3 years. So lots of interesting things going on with the Stanton deal. I don't think Jeter got back as much as he could have or should have. But then again, we weren't in those negotiations. And he did make it quite public that he was ready to make that deal. So perhaps he played his hand too early, and other teams took advantage of that when they were negotiating.
All right, John Poulter with us, our professor of sports from Toronto. And, you know, Steve, his company produces a music format, and it's called the Flashback Station. You can actually get it at kwwradio.com and at internetfm.com. And do you play any Goo Goo Dolls on that, Steve? Just a question.
Of course.
Okay, good. They're performing at the 2018 Bridgestone NHL Winter Classic New Year's Day outdoor game between the Rangers and the Buffalo Sabres. They're a Buffalo-based band. That's on NBC, 1 o'clock Eastern time on New Year's Day. This has turned into kind of a New Year's Day tradition now on NBC, this outdoor game, John.
Yeah, I can't say that I'm a big fan of it, guys. It was a novelty when it first happened. Edmonton and the Montreal Canadiens were the first outdoor game. I'm going to say that was probably about 15 years ago now. I'm not a big fan of it. I guess everybody goes for the atmosphere. I had an opportunity to go last year when the Detroit Red Wings were playing the Toronto Maple Leafs here in Toronto in an outdoor situation. But quite frankly, I don't see it. You're so far from the rink. These guys look like little flies. You're in the nosebleed section of the nosebleed section is the best way I can look at it. And I just don't see it, quite frankly, other than a way for the NHL to make money, the NHL and the teams to sell more jerseys, i.e. make more money, and the TV people to make more money. I don't really think it's good hockey, and it's a novelty. It's probably outlived its usefulness, but as long as the turnstiles keep turning and the cash registers keep ka-chinging, I suspect we're going to see more of them.
Yeah, but you know, John, just because we don't make any money doesn't mean that we shouldn't allow other people to reap the rewards of what they do, just because we don't.
Well, there's always somebody
that will part
with their money for the wrong reasons, Dave. You and I both know that.
Yeah, the ironic thing is they're trying to sort of commemorate or throw back to the days when people played hockey outdoors, except I just had a long conversation with somebody who grew up in Minnesota and played outdoors as a kid. He says nobody plays outdoors anymore. They all play indoors now. So, I mean, it's kind of an anachronism in today's standards.
And an acronym.
That's exactly right. When are we going to see a Major League Baseball game played on a sand lot? Because that, to me, is the parallel here, to see the Dodgers and the Giants playing on the 4th of August on a sand lot as opposed to a field. I mean, that's frankly how silly it's gotten.
Or do it like the old days where they used to have people could actually stand in the outfield, like in way, way back in the 20s and teens. You know, yeah.
You're talking about pictures of the old polo grounds now from the early 1900s. That's for sure.
Exactly. Okay, well, John, we sure appreciate the info here today, as always, and you have a great remainder of your day and a very happy new year, my friend.
Thank you very much. Always good to join you guys, and all the best to you and your families in the new year.
Okay, let's take a little time here to talk about one of the big bowl games, Georgia and Oklahoma. That's the Rose Bowl. Now let's bring in from Atlanta, talking about Georgia, he is Dan Lynn. Dan, how are you?
Great, sir. How are you doing?
All right, doing just fine. And Dan has been a correspondent, a sports correspondent in that area for decades, and has worked with our company here, has been on the show several times. So let's get a preview, Georgia and Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl, from your perspective.
Well, they were really lucky to get Kirby Smart, believe it or not, just 2 years ago. And look what he did in 2 years. He gets them an SEC title and the final playoff run for the national title. That's an amazing run in just a couple of years. So I'll just say the $4 million in his salary was well spent.
Uh-huh. And how do you think they're going to match up against Oklahoma? You know, those teams are playing pretty good defense out there, and Oklahoma's got
them. Certainly are. I mean, it's kind of odd that the original name of this was the East-West, like Rose Bowl game or something. So, but anyway, it's odd to see the teams that are in it and how it kind of curtails to what the original premise of the bowl was. But as far as the two teams matching up, you got. A quarterback that wasn't supposed to start for Georgia. They had Eason in that slot. They expected him to stay there for 3 years, but then he sprained his knee back against Appalachian State to start the season this year. So Fromm has taken over, and he's doing a really nice job with what he's had to work with. But he has some good running backs with him, and Nick Chubb and. Who's had a nice year himself, as well as a number two or three back, and DeAndre Swift. I mean, what better name to have for a receiver or a running back whose last name is Swift? But he had a nice 63-yard run, I guess, against Auburn to seal the deal in that SEC title game. He just put it in overdrive, and he was just had so much speed, he blew by everybody.
And, Dave, think about the tradition, the history of Georgia football. You know, Herschel Walker and, in more present time, you know, Todd Gurley was a Georgia Bulldog.
I will tell you one thing. You guys, a lot of people don't know this, but Herschel Walker literally saved Vince Dooley's career. They were talking about Vince Dooley like they were Mark Richt this past year. They didn't like all the small bowls he was going to, and then here comes Herschel Walker, and nobody will ever admit to that happening, but it did. If you're around 60 years old, you know, my brother confirmed it for me. He's 9 years older than me. But yeah, so that's why Vince Dooley was about to cry when Herschel went to the USFL. He didn't like that at all.
And the other SEC team is playing Alabama. I know hopefully you've had at least some exposure to Alabama. They're unbelievable. They're going to play against Clemson, who also, that game should have a lot of defense in a rematch of last year's championship game. So it doesn't matter whoever comes out of it. It's certainly going to be interesting, and we've got to look forward to a great, great championship game in early January. Right, Dave?
Okay, Dan, what do you think Georgia's biggest strength is going into this game against Oklahoma, and what do they have to do to pull out of this with a win?
Well, they unexpectedly they have speed on their offense as far as their backs go, and that's what it's going to take. It's going to take big plays to beat these guys. Because I mean, Oklahoma they've averaged like 28 points a game in their last seven wins. They've won seven in a row. So they're, I think, having a big 6'8", 345-pound tackle sure doesn't hurt. But I think it's going to be a great game.
All right, Dan. Well, great to have you on the program. We'll do it again a few weeks down the line. Dan Lynn, sports correspondent from Atlanta. And we want to thank you for listening to the Sports Report. Remember, you can get us at kwwradio.com and internetfm.com. New shows are posted every Thursday afternoon for your listening pleasure. So for Dan Lynn from Atlanta, for Andy Dorf from Phoenix, for John Poulter, our professor of sports from Toronto, for Steve Leventhal from SRN Broadcasting in Chicago, I'm Packer Dave. Dang, thanks a lot. Have a great new year. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars.
That's right, tough guy.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Get some bears, scumbag!
Goodbye.
Tell you what, dipstick, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt. Pucker up, buttercup.
Yeah, I hear you, fruitcake.
Oh, it's hopeless. I ought to club them and eat their bones.
Goodbye.
Now you ladies carry on.
Excellent.
See you later, pal. I'm going home.
Wait a minute.
Well, I'm glad that's over. Now it's over.
Good night, ladies.
Good night, sir.
Let's get out of here.